Good morning, good evening, whenever you're listening to this podcast. How's it going? I'm Tyler Dunn here with Jim Monas, the Go Long podcast at golongtd.com, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever, however. Jim, how you doing, my man? How you been? Cheers.
Well, we got a cheers to the weather today here in Western New York, don't we?
Glorious. It's glorious, isn't it?
It's the off season.
70s all week, baby.
It's the off season, so when you get that warm weather, it officially makes you feel like, you know, it's time now. Like, what are we going to talk about? What's in the news in football? It's at, you know, but there's plenty to talk about. There always is.
You know, you've really reached, you've become a middle-aged man when what you look forward to most in life is mowing the lawn. I've been looking forward to that first mow for months, and it was unbelievable. Just pop a good audiobook on, listening to Atomic Habits, great book, on Chris Bergen's advice, right? We talked to him for a story, Go Long, the Northwestern linebacker. He highly recommended it, and everybody does. It's great, but it was good. I got to say, I'm off my game, though. I missed some spots. The grass was high. The neighbor thought that we were dead. She said, where you been? The grass was getting pretty high.
They were concerned.
Yeah. But we were grinding on the draft. What can you do? Two kids, draft coverage. It was lagging. But that first mow, it's hard to beat.
I mean, and not to mention you're writing a book.
That too. Yeah. We're on the final surge there.
Just a couple things going on.
I don't know how gory I want to get with this, but with the mow, you know, opened up the shed and there were a couple mice that scattered about. Mm-hmm. And thinking, okay, party's over, guys. Party's over. Now we're setting the traps every day and taking care of business there. But I started mowing, Jim, and let's just say on about the first or second lap around near the shed, there was a little carnage.
Yeah, I thought you were
carnage.
Yeah, I had a feeling you might go that way.
They were inside that John Deere hanging around the blades, unfortunately. Hopefully Pete is not listening. But it's survival of the fittest. I guess that's why we're above mice on the food chain, right?
You know, and when you're scouting players, awareness is such a major factor. Yeah, if you're the mice have to be a little bit aware of where they're resting or sitting. Yeah. There had to be some sense of, you know, feeling to know that that blade might be able to get you. And sounds like you tried to give them a chance. You know, at some point you have to have awareness.
You got to have some spatial awareness, right?
That's fair.
Spatial awareness. Very, very poor. And you know what? I let it run for a while before I popped the old blade.
I was going to say, you were trying to.
I gave him a fair opportunity, right? It's kind of like you're at war. You let out a gunshot. There's a little warning shot there. And they didn't react. So. But other than that, it was a great mow. It was great.
Room for improvement. There's room for improvement, though. You saw some things you weren't happy about.
Well, yeah, the push mower, you know, with that tall grass, it stalled out a few times. I mean, is there a weed whacker that works in the world, honestly? For the love of God. I mean, I feel like I want to take it like it's a hockey stick and just crack it against the goalie net and split it in half. Like, yeah, that gonna have to get a new weed whacker. So we're a little, you know, it's looking pretty rough around the trees and in the yard. But we're gonna watch the film, correct our errors, and can get after it.
You keep saying we.
Oh, we're gonna get Sonny out there. You know, he's 9 months, but we'll get him out there. Yeah, he's working.
That'll probably be a good feeling for you someday.
Yeah, you know what though? It's one of those things. I think I'm just gonna always want to do it. Yeah, you kind of can escape everything.
Some people like golf. Some people like doing yard work. It's whatever you can do to get that escape for a little bit.
Yeah, that's true.
Or go to the casino, or, you know, whatever that one thing is that you need to do to.
We were going to do a podcast a couple days ago, and you said, well, I got this window of opportunity because I'm shooting over to the old
casino.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. It was good. A little pre-dinner, you know, a little blackjack, Had a good table downtown. It was nice. Had a good table. Yeah, it was nice. Good time.
Success with the
yeah,
the
little success. Nothing big, but you know, roller coaster ride. Kept the heart beating.
Good.
Had fun. Good entertainment. Harmless entertainment.
Well, I figured for this podcast episode, Jim, we'd kind of break it off into two parts, as people probably see in their feeds right now. But the free agency is pretty much over, right? There's a few out there you can get at bargain rates, but by and large, all the big names are on teams. The draft's over. Everybody's moving on to the 2029 mock drafts by now. Maybe 2030s, maybe looking at some sonograms and, you know, reading some heartbeats, seeing who's got some good spatial awareness in there.
It is incredible. I swear I saw something from McShay right away after the draft. Like, he seriously had one ready to go, like top 20, you know, for next year. Quarterbacks are going to be, you know, it's like, man.
You know, it's, yeah, I mean, I get it. It's that.
No, it is.
It's chum in the water. People want it. No, you know, who are the names? No. It's always funny how people decide or who's going to be awful next year. And we'll mock them at the top of the mock for the future.
I think he did it with, I think he said he was just ranking the players, no teams.
Okay. Well, that's fair. We'll allow it.
I mean, it is his job. It's his job.
But with everything off season wise, kind of figured out, you know, we've got some big decisions kind of looming. Baker Mayfield, Jimmy Garoppolo, right? There's some other stuff to work out, but we figured we'd do one episode on a couple teams each that we think have positioned themselves really, really well and could maybe make a serious run at the playoffs, contention. Just we think that they handled their business the right way and added talent the right way. And then part two, we'll look at the other side of the coin, Jim, and see what teams kind of screwed themselves potentially and are treading water or worse. But let's start with happy times, good times, and I'll let you take the floor.
So mine are pretty – I don't know if they're boring for who I think is going to be good because they were good last year, but I just can't – I'm pretty simple. When if you have a quarterback and you have defense – I think you're going to be just fine. And I think the two teams, no matter – the one team is kind of obvious, the Buffalo Bills. I just see no reason why they aren't going to make a run at it again. And the Green Bay Packers. And my reasoning for the Packers right now is, why would Rodgers come back and play unless he really fully is invested and believes and is upset? Maybe a little embarrassed. I don't know. I mean, we talk about him all the time. So, I mean, it's almost, and I've admitted I can't stick up for him anymore with how he's played in the playoffs. It makes no sense to me, but he's still the best. He's still the best in the league. At least one of the top three, five, however you want to get into those arguments. But, and then look at their division. Bears, Vikings, Detroit.
Counting out Dan Campbell's.
That's what I'm saying. So right off the bat, you're still, I mean, to me, there's such a gap, you know, quarterback wise in that division. I just, to me, same with the Bills. You know, I think the gap between Josh Allen and every other quarterback in that division is big. So I just like those teams' chances to at least, you know, get that number one or two seed, get some home field, make the run. It's boring, though. I mean, I know it's kind of boring, but.
Well, it's pandering, Jim. You're pandering to our audience, so that's never a bad thing. You know, here and there, pick your spot. No.
it's just so.
Politician Monus.
It's hard to believe. I know. It's just, I can't see those teams faltering. You know, I just don't see it.
I don't either. I know. Those are two great picks, and I'm guessing a lot of people listening to this listen to Bob McGinn and myself on the podcast.
Well, that one really had me, you know, because I'm sitting there. I defend Gutekis. I'm kind of, you know, on his side. I think their team is pretty good. I don't know these rookies that they drafted. Like, I don't know them well enough if they're going to be plug and play starters. Those two guys from Georgia that Green Bay took. I think they're plug and play. I mean, they took them in the first round. So, you know, a lot of that will depend, you know, factor in on their defense for sure. But you lost Davante Adams, you know, tough one, but you didn't lose the guy that matters. So,
yeah, I think they were stunned to lose Davante Adams, Aaron Rodgers, Brian Gutekunst. Players were, I talked to a couple, nobody really saw it coming. I think we all assumed like, okay, it's this package deal, quarterback, receiver. They've kind of, Rodgers has really been able to extend his greatness because of Davante Adams. Davante Adams has been able to become a top three wide receiver because of Aaron Rodgers. They kind of seem best for each other, but you lose him, you get a decent haul. You don't have to pay him. I feel like, you know, at Bob's point, and it's hard to argue with Bob, he talks to scouts around the league. Yeah. Like, he knows these prospects better than anybody in the media, I'd say. So yeah, I don't know. Quay Walker, Devontae Wyatt, Christian Watson. We'll see how these guys pan out, but the philosophy of Gutekunst, I think, is sound. And you talk about this on this podcast too, Jim, where, you know, you lose a wide receiver and instead of just kind of treading water and just drafting a guy or signing, like, I feel like they're trying to win this new way, this different way. And they want, like you said, they've got the quarterback. They've got a hell of a running game. If they can figure out the line, there's, you know, they lost some guys up there, but they drafted some guys too. You can win this other way. I mean, they're really strong in the middle of their defense. You've got Kenny Clark now, Devontae Wyatt, Quay Walker, Devondre Campbell. Like, that's the middle of your defense, where I think of these playoff losses that the Packers have had, and it's been, you know, Marshawn Lynch running right up the gut, Seattle. It's been just, I mean, San Francisco, Raheem Mostert doing whatever he wanted to in the NFC Championship game. Last year, San Francisco, what, third and six, whatever it was, and they run for the first down. Like, they needed to get physically tougher. And that was kind of the counterpunch that I think Gutekunst had. I think that he didn't just want to keep throwing the uppercut, you know, throwing the same, he's looking for a different punch. I think that if these guys work out, hey, I don't know much about Quay Walker, Devontae Wyatt. I really don't. I'm not saying I'm an expert on Georgia
football. Nobody really knows. I mean,
but his track record is pretty good when it comes to drafting defense players.
I appreciate you bringing that up, because we talked about that on the draft happy hour, about that spinning wheels, losing a guy in free agency and then drafting his position in the first round. It's just, did you get better? What did you do? And this is his way of saying, okay, we have a philosophy. We stick to the best player, the guys we think can help us right away, and however they believe. I'm happy that, you know, because I like Gutekunst, and I like to see how he didn't panic. He stuck to what he believes. Took two guys, which I've always said, if I was ever a GM, if you had the quarterback in place, I swear I'd be drafting defense nonstop. Nonstop. Is that right? Yep, just keep building that defense. The quarterback will take care of the offense. He'll find a way.
That's interesting, because I think a lot of people would think you go the Polian route. Remember with Peyton Manning, it seemed like they were drafting Reggie Wayne, Edgerrin James, Dallas Clark, just like a weapon high in the draft year after year. But maybe the other way is better. Maybe you just let that quarterback figure it out.
Yeah, and I'm saying that, like, I wouldn't force it. I wouldn't do that either. I wouldn't go the other way and just say, just because you have a great quarterback, let's just keep giving him weapons. No, at some point, that's the reward of having that great quarterback. He's going to make other people better. And if you put a defense out there with a great quarterback, it's just a formula for success, and we've seen it over and over. Like, you're going to make the run every year. You'll be relevant.
And where I would disagree with Bob is he basically labeled the receiving core a collection of number threes, which he made a really good point. I mean, if you look at the raw numbers and what they've done.
Exactly. I agree. He might be right.
I think, and we talked about, and you may be as well, I'm a little higher on Sammy Watkins. It's a huge if. Huge if. But if he's out there, if he's on the field,
you never know.
He can still give you something.
Boy, would that be That would be the story of the year right there.
Alan Lazard is Alan Lazard. He'll block really well. He'll make the catch when it's thrown to him. He's not a burner, but
no,
he is what he is. They need something out of Amari Rodgers, third round pick from last year. Christian Watson is kind of Marquez Valdes-Scantling. He's going to beat you deep. He's going to run the deep over and they're work that deep play action. They can get something out of him.
There's still guys out there. There's still time. You never know who could sneak in there. And, you know, it's, but
Odell Beckham.
Boy, that would be fun too. Beckham, to think that Beckham and Sammy could be on the same team after that, being in that same draft.
Oh man, that'd be great.
All the time we, oh man.
You had a few conversations about those two and the Bills.
It's incredible to think about meeting. To think that they would both be in Green Bay.
Anything else on Green Bay?
Any I was kind of curious to hear how you thought about that. Cause I know they are boring. I don't want to say boring picks, but I mean, you know, if we're talking about the two teams, I have high expectations for it's those teams. I mean, I like the way they're built. Love the quarterbacks, love the defenses.
And I'm going to go back to, so our subscribers can read the whole series and go along td.com. All of Bob's draft coverage, it's underneath the McGinn draft tab at the top of the screen. So every single position, he's got a column, leads with a story with an angle, and then it gets into the rankings, which is really a poll of the scouts and all of their thoughts. But Quay Walker was his number three linebacker. And yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it now. Opinions were all over the place. You know, check it out to read in full, but one scout said that his instincts suck, but the guy can run. You take a shot on him. He's not a green dot. Doesn't think he can run a defense. Another guy says he's physical, taking on blocks. What else we got here? Another guy says, another scout, it's hard to find those ones that are big and can run. He'll strike you. He'll be a mic. He'll be able to match guys athletically in coverage. I don't know what else you really want out of a linebacker. Like that's
funny. I was the way you just said that. I was thinking, man, that sounds okay to me.
Yeah. Well, it's
here's my last team that I was thinking about, but the 49ers, I'm always fascinated with how they're, you know, what they're going to do at quarter. Like there's no way Garoppolo is going to be there. Is there? I mean, that thing's got to be done, right? They said goodbye to him. Like,
I would think that teams are waiting to check out his shoulder.
Yeah, and I'm just not ready.
He can't throw. He can't work out for anybody. Why would you?
I just like that team so much.
Trade anything for him.
You know, if Debo comes back, and I just love that team so much, but I'm not ready to put Trey Lance in that. You know, I need to see him play. Because like we talked about, what I saw from him did not look good to me, so –
definitely a team that I'm planning on doing a deep dive on this offseason because
a lot of drama.
Reasons you're talking about. There's a lot of intrigue. I mean, they were a game away from the Super Bowl. You're handing the keys to a pretty big unknown.
Complete unknown.
I think Debo Samuel's warming back up, it seems. I don't know. The fact that we just haven't heard much the last week and a half, 2 weeks, I think is probably good for San Francisco. And you've just got – I mean, you've got players on both sides of the ball who can just take over a game.
That's why I'm intrigued by them.
Kittle, Debo, Bosa, Warner. All over the place. Tough players. So,
agreed. So who you got? Who are teams that you expect some big things for? Who are the teams you're running to FanDuel? You're going to FanDuel tonight to take –
well, I'm not gambling anymore, Jim. I'm done. I'm out.
You won enough. You had your fill.
Yep, I took advantage of those free giveaway. Yeah. And I made out pretty good. And I know when to say no. I know my strengths. All right, I think this could backfire. The old takes exposed. Police could come and get me. This team has basically been bait on the line for so many people year after year. Do you remember those infomercials back in the 90s, banjo minnow lures? They were.
That doesn't ring a bell.
Oh my God. It was, this commercial was on. It was almost like on as much as the Tom Emanski back to back to back AAU World Championship commercials. But it was a fish and lure, and it was on TV all the time. And we got it when we were little kids, and we went fishing with our grandpa all the time. I don't know if we caught one fish in that lure. I mean, on TV, they're showing like these 25 inch bass, just taking it. That's kind of been the Miami Dolphins for a lot of people for several years. But I'm going to buy that banjo lure, throw it in the water, and believe in 2022. Right now, I kind of like Miami. I think that they have a smart coach in Mike McDaniel who is going to maximize everybody in the run game especially. They went out and they just added a ton of talent. And I think if you have a quarterback on a rookie deal, you have to do it. I mean, go right down the list. Obviously, Tyreek Hill, but Cedric Wilson was really good last year for Dallas. Taron Armstead at left tackle. I mean, you know the Saints as well as anybody.
I really like him. Strong pickup.
Connor Williams at left guard. Look at their running game. Chase Edmonds, Raheem Mostert, Sony Michel, Miles Gaskin. You got four backs.
You made a good point talking about the coach being smart, and he's had success with Garoppolo. We've talked about it on this show. I think Tua can be like, I see those guys as similar type players where Tua has shown some signs of good things, just like Garoppolo does. The one thing they both have in common is just the gut-wrenching, horrible decision-making turnovers that you can't explain. But can that be, you know, can that change? Sure.
I mean, you just made my point. The fact that they were able to move the ball and win games and score points with Jimmy Garoppolo, who just kind of – he's that no kind of quarterback where you almost had, three pick sixes against Green Bay at Lambeau Field in the playoffs. I feel like Tua's better than Jimmy Garoppolo.
I couldn't say that yet. But yes, could he be better? Yeah, I think he might be able to be.
There's a little more movement. I don't know. I mean, he was accurate last year. It was when they had that winning streak.
He was so good on opening drives of games and the mm-hmm. way they do play action. He is so natural with it. And then the red zone and the decision-making, you just can't explain it sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain guys that you have to just, that's the only thing that really jumped out every week. I watched him, and you're never going to consistently win when you have you can't have that flaw in your game where you turn the game changes on a turnover, you know?
I'm not ready to take that leap and just say that he's going to be Josh Allen next year. But I think that there's a formula that could work for Miami.
But I feel bad now. Like that's a gutsy pick. Like you put some where I just took Green Bay and Buffalo. Wow. That was real hard. So would every, you know, fifth grader.
One of us has a set of balls and one of us doesn't. Jim, what can you do?
I was going to say, I'm just feeling a little like I'm letting you like, oh really, Jim, you think Green Bay and Buffalo might be good? I mean, I think they were pretty much the one in number one seed last year and Buffalo, whatever. That old NFL.com has those bold predictions every week. Yours is more of a bold prediction.
Jalen Waddle. I mean, hello, we forget about him as a rookie. I mean, he was he's basically kind of your running game. I mean, you can dump it off to him and just let him go.
I mean, the tight end is a weapon. Just him.
Mike Gesicki, who, by the way, is now coached by one of the best tight end coaches in NFL history, John Embry.
Ooh, good call. I like that.
He coached Tony Gonzalez in Kansas City. He coached George Kittle in San Francisco. And in between,
I like that Miami. Yep.
You look at Embry's past, Jim. Like, he had Jordan Cameron in Cleveland when Jordan Cameron had that crazy year of like 900 yards. Right. He had Kellen Winslow in Tampa. He had, I want to say, Chris Cooley in Washington. Everybody, every tight end he's had has had like a career year. bookended by Tony Gonzalez taking off and George Kittle. I don't know why San Francisco would fire him, why they would let him out of the building, but he's in Miami and he's going to, I mean, I think Mike Gesicki has 1,000 yards. Well, they've got a lot of weapons and we'll see with Tua. He's got that potential to be 1,000 yard, 12 touchdown tight end.
Yeah. And those, that style of offense that they run, I mean, those tight ends have success. So,
and we're only talking about the offense. I think defensively, look, I've criticized their drafts. Chris Greer has been there a long time. There's been some bad picks mixed in there, but a few of them have a shot. I mean, Jalen Phillips turned it around last year, showed some potential. Christian Wilkins and the D-line, you signed Emmanuel Ogba. He gave you some pass rush. I guess the pass rush would maybe be a little bit of a concern. Like, see what you get out of those guys compared to you go to the AFC West. Every single team has two like legit studs.
You made a bold prediction because I you know you did. I'm saying I like it. Like, there's always a team, obviously, it's going to take a step you didn't really think about, and they have that potential to if Tua.
Xavier Howard might be the best cornerback in football.
No question.
He covers and he makes plays. I think you know who the wild card might be. They didn't have many high picks, but this Channing Tindall, I don't know much about him, but just researching, watching a little. If all right, like, this is the big if, the big wild card. If he as an athletic linebacker can kind of be that dude who can spy and roam and keep his eyes on Josh. I mean, it's about Josh Allen, right? Josh Allen kills his team. He owns the Miami Dolphins right now. But if he can be that player, yeah, right? They need an athletic linebacker who can – you're not going to stop Allen, but contain him to an extent, steal some possessions. Maybe he's that guy that gives him a shot.
Especially after the Micah Parsons success. I don't know much about this, but might not be that edge guy that Parsons was, but that type of athletic player that can change the game.
Well, just to continue to, be a marketing whiz here and tease Bob's draft series, right? I've got Channing Tindall's scouting report up right now, Jim. This is from the scouts. And, yeah, I mean, it's all over the place. One guy said he gets locked on a guy and it's over. When he arrives, he is not in a pleasant disposition. His issue is he's not smart. You just worry about him mentally. So this guy's basically saying he's violent, but he's not that smart. One guy said he's going to be like Bobby Wagner. If it clicks, he could be a stud. Wow. Another scout, he worked out crazy like all those Georgia guys did. They use him to do one thing, run in a straight line. He ran a 4.5, 6.2, 228. He played in 50 games and never started because they rotate their linebackers so much at Georgia. Those Georgia, it's hard to figure out. All right, so let me ask you this, Jim. You're a scout. You're studying a team like, I mean, historically great defense like Georgia. They had just – their whole defense was drafted. How do you figure out who's good, who's a product of the system? That's got to be so hard to sort through.
Georgia had a defense like this when I was scouting the Southeast. Bakari Rambo was the safety. They had about – in fact, I want to say we took their defensive tackle, Jenkins, with the Saints. I'd have to go back and look at that draft. But they had like 9 starters get drafted. And I remember you basically would spend – you could possibly spend 2 to 3 days there just on their defense. Like, if you're really doing it the right way, it's probably worthwhile to take that time as a scout. And then you might come back a month later and then spend, 2 days on the offense, if you have to. But I'm telling you, there are certain teams that where you knew – during the week, you're like, Florida State was that team when I was scouting too, where they were, I mean, you're looking at 18, 19 guys. Like, it's unbelievable the amount of time you spend. Yeah. And to your point, it can be guys that aren't starting is where we were talking about that.
I mean, the Bills, they took a chance on a player like that from Georgia on the other side of the ball, right? James Cook, running back. He didn't start that much. He was underutilized, but you're projecting this player to fit in the NFL game. which it happens. Look at George Kittle at Iowa.
It happens.
I mean, George Kittle statistically wasn't always much.
Remember we talked about that. He had drops. He didn't put up great stats. I mean,
they had his
but
weight.
The whole NFL needed. Saw. But remember, the whole NFL saw him that way. You know, that's why he did. You know, so it wasn't just that he really. You know, where like Cook goes in the second round. That's a you know, fifth round. Talking about Kittle, that that's is
true.
The NFL just everybody saw him. The
everybody
same.
Did miss him, but he something inside of him projected well because. It was year two that he set the record for most receiving yards ever by a tight end.
Incredible. Incredible.
I have that Georgia defense up in 2012 that you referenced there. And
okay.
Like they had some stuff. It wasn't like this group, but yeah.
No, but go through it. Yeah, I was talking about the amount of guys. This crew, I think, probably had more first rounders.
Alec Ogletree had 111 tackles. Oh, man, Jarvis Jones. 14 and a half sacks. I forgot about Jarvis Jones. He went high, right? Pittsburgh first round.
Yeah. He just was a, yeah.
But remember the short arms, he didn't have the stature, but things. He had the production.
A lot of things. He was tough. He was a tough, good football player, but yeah. Lack.
Kari Rambo, Sanders Cummings.
Cummings. Liked him.
Don Jenkins.
Jenkins was the guy we drafted in New Orleans, too.
Kwame Gethers. Remember all the Gethers's? There's a bunch
huge.
Of them.
He was huge.
Yeah, there was a decent crew there.
Decent. They weren't like the like you said. They didn't pay like, but they had a good amount drafted. I really want to say they had 9 drafted.
One more team for you.
Yeah,
we'll see with Miami. I just feel like
that's a bowl. I like it.
Tyreek's going to be a problem. I don't care who his quarterback is. I mean, get him the ball. You know,
don't think for a second. Don't think for a second the Bills were like great. Like we sit there and we've been, you know, trying to beat him in KC these last couple of years. And now we got to deal with him in our division.
Well, if I'm Brandon Bean, yeah, I'm guessing he'd be the one in charge at this point on deciding who to sign. Although he probably has Sean McDermott in his ear on this matter.
No.
Right. You're doing everything in your power to get James Bradberry.
I honestly, that would be hard for me to think he doesn't end up in Buffalo. Just knowing really? The way Sean used to talk. Sean loved Bradberry, loved him. So
when did you guys talk about him?
We just talked. I think I'm going to tell you why we talked about him. Because Sean wanted to know what we felt about him coming out when he was coming out of Samford. Because Sean, I think he was trying to see kind of, hey, how did you evaluate him, you know, coming out to see if we were on the same page with him. Like, this is my style of guy, like physical.
Testing you in dugout.
Yeah. And he was a guy we did spend a lot of time on. I can remember going to Samford's practice. In fact, I was there with Mark Ross, a friend of our, you know, NFL Network. I remember we were at practice together. I mean, he looked like an NFL starting corner. I mean, you know, we always talk about that. Sometimes you just see a guy like, yeah, take him off the bus. He can play. But anyway, that was his way. We're just talking about Bradberry. And that was a guy we went back and forth on. Ed Reed loved him at the time when he was coaching in Buffalo. Ed Reed loved James Bradberry. I do remember that.
It makes a lot of sense. Even though you drafted one in the first round, I mean, you don't know Tre'Davious White's status.
Can't have enough of him.
You really can't.
Window is open, right? Bring him on. Keep bringing them on.
Waddle as a number two, number three now in the slot against your third or fourth best. I mean, it's just there's a lot of problems that Miami can create there with a smart coach. That's what makes me take this leap, Jim, with Miami is you have somebody who can devise an offense and think three steps ahead of your defense. It's not like they've got some retread where we've seen with this,
no.
You know, Dunce can do with an offense. I mean, this is a smart coach who's going to scheme up things. I mean, we've seen okay quarterbacks have really great seasons when they've been schemed up.
No question.
Right. Individual seasons. I mean, Nick Foles, when that offense, when it was working with Chip Kelly, right? They have 27 touchdowns, 2 picks 1 year. Hey, lightning in a bottle can't be struck. So, all right, give me Miami, and then for the other team, I'll go with the Baltimore Ravens. I just feel like we've kind of been sleeping on a perennial playoff team where they were 8-3 at the end of November last year after they beat Cleveland. And then right around that is when they lost Lamar Jackson. But it wasn't just him. They had an apocalyptic string of injuries, both sides of the ball, all over the place. It was awful. I mean, they had like fourth stringers out there in the secondary. Just a really sad group at times. And yet, listen to how December and January went for them.
They were
at Pittsburgh, 2019 loss. At Cleveland, 24-22 loss. Green Bay, remember that? Tyler Huntley was running all over the place. They gave that game away. They should have had it. 31-30 loss. They lose at Cincy, 41-21. Burrow threw for about 900 yards after the defensive coordinator, who has since been fired in Baltimore, who I actually like a lot, Wink Martindale, was right talking smack, saying we don't have his gold jacket or all that. Then they lose to the Super Bowl champs, the Los Angeles Rams, 2019, 1 point. Odell had a couple clutch catches late in the game that won that. And then they lost in overtime to the Steelers. So they're out there with this ragtag bunch and lost these 1 and 2 point games to finish 8-9.
No.
You get Lamar Jackson back, who's going to be hungry.
He's not got just a lot
of money to play for.
Their corners, the defensive backs.
Yes.
They were so banged up last year. They're getting those guys back. This could be – now, I like this pick. Like, I like what you're saying here. This is going to be where can Lamar's legacy end up? Can he ever get past Mahomes and Josh Allen? You know, can he do it? And
let's not forget about training camp, Jim, too. Remember the running backs that went down? J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards,
the whole team.
Justice Hill. I mean, they lost three backs before the season began.
Yeah. They seriously weren't even right. So, but this to me will be this is where legacy will always be. Like, is he going to be the guy that was just incredible, but ran into Josh Allen and Mahomes?
Yeah. I mean, it's,
but I like that.
We're going to see. They did trade Hollywood Brown, obviously.
Yeah.
Who Lamar Jackson lobbied for. He told management to draft Hollywood Brown.
Crazy. And Brown, but Brown dropped. I like that they did that. He drops too many for me.
He dropped a lot of passes. And
those are game changing. Like you, I'm sorry, but those aren't characteristics of teams that win Super Bowls. Like guys that, you know, drop passes or like, I just, there's certain guys like go let somebody else change him, get him fixed.
Yeah,
he is obviously he's a weapon. I'm not saying, you know, I don't want to say he's not a weapon, but
it's not as catastrophic of a loss as people might think. I like Rashad Bateman a lot. They've got Devin Duvernay. I mean, it's not murderer's row of pass catchers.
Yeah, not when you have
Lamar. Their offense is different there.
Don't forget about that tight end. That tight end is a monster.
Mark Andrews. It starts with him.
So
they drafted Isaiah Likely, friend of the program. Yeah. Came on the happy.
I know, that was cool. Okay. I saw that. Yeah.
But look at look at the first round. So you trade Hollywood Brown away. So you've got these two first rounders. Doesn't it seem, Jim? I mean, so you were in the draft rooms and you're watching Baltimore year after year. I mean, ever since Ozzie Newsome took that thing over 96 and drafted Jonathan Ogden and Ray Lewis and set that whole foundation for success. It just seems like this team capitalizes on other teams' screw-ups. Like other teams just let a really good football player trickle down into the mid first round, late first round, and Baltimore pounces year after year. Kyle Hamilton, Notre Dame, safety.
That
you make the case he's the best player in the draft. And they got him in the middle of the first round.
So you add him and then they get healthy at defensive back.
Exactly. And they sign Marcus Williams.
And you got Marcus Williams. So you have him at safety with Hamilton.
Tyler Linderbaum, Notre Dame. Iowa center, like best center prospect that Pro Football Focus has ever graded. So, get him at the end of the first round. Like it happens year after year with this team. I'm pulling it up right now. You go through their drafts. I mean, it's nuts. I mean, way back in 11, Jimmy Smith, 27th overall, Torrey Smith, 58th overall. Even that year, Pernell McPhee, 165.
Yeah.
Gosh, you go to,
that's a good one.
They drafted, I forgot, they drafted Kyle Juszczyk. Then San Francisco got him. CJ Mosley.
Mosley.
Za'Darius Smith, 122.
Yeah.
I mean, they have their misses like any team, but Matt Judon, 146 in 2016.
Strong drafts. Well, the best thing about the two things about the Ravens, I still want the story on how you have your MVP quarterback, but yet you took the tight end from South Carolina, Hurst, before him.
Yeah.
That story I need more on that one. And then this new thing with Greg Roman, it just came out, you know, with players saying, that's always scary, you know. You don't want players rumbling like that in the media about the offensive coordinator.
Did it surprise you, or was it?
I can't say it surprised me. I think it's another example of, and I'm okay with it, just where players are just feeling a little more empowered. And if they don't believe in a coach and they think it's hurting their career, you know, they're going to make sure that that gets out there.
It wasn't just Hollywood Brown either. I remember hearing it from other receivers that left. Was it Willie Snead maybe when he left? I think he was vocal. Steve Smith on NFL Network had that epic rant.
Epic.
Out of nowhere, railing against Greg Roman and called his route designs and everything basically elementary, right?
It's a hard one, you know, just working with him. I don't spend enough time in the XO department. You know, we're not in those meetings and really understanding what, you know, so that's where I don't ever know how, you know, obviously he knows a lot about football and his designs of his offenses, and, you know, they're fun to watch. I mean, that's a proven stat, but I don't know. It's just funny when players come out like that.
It's interesting. I mean, you've said it several times, but he wanted Matt Cassel. Like, that was his guy in Buffalo, and he didn't want Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor becomes the starter. Greg Roman becomes this, you know, running quarterback guru, play designer, from Colin Kaepernick to Tyrod Taylor to Lamar Jackson. Almost kind of falls into that when he didn't really want that kind of quarterback.
I would like to know how much Anthony Lynn had to do with our offense when Tyrod was, you know, I felt like Anthony Lynn, I'm talking about kind of when he came in. I just wonder how good Anthony Lynn, you know, I think he was a pretty good play caller.
And he's in San Francisco now as the assistant head coach, which you lose Mike McDaniel, but you gain Anthony Lynn. That running game isn't going to miss a beat.
No.
But guys, that's what I forget how good your running game was, though, in 2015, Jim. I mean,
we talked about it, it was scary.
2,432 yards, 19 touchdowns. And it was shady. I mean, he missed four games. Carlos Williams, and he missed five games. It was a little bit of everything. Mike Gillisley had a few moments in there.
Oh, we got him off practice squad. Yeah. That was a guy we all liked. Our pro scouting department, Gerald Dixon, myself, we did some good work on him. We liked him. When I scouted him in Florida, he was just that, like, captain, tough guy that you wanted running back, you know. And then and that's how the pro scouting department works, where, you know, Gerald Dixon brings him up to me. He's like, hey, man, this guy looks good. He's on the practice squad. And I was like, oh, you know, I liked him at Florida. And then I watch him a little bit. Hey, like him. Whaley likes him. Boom, done. Pick him right off.
What a great find. I remember in Florida, wasn't the thing free Gilly? Like, they wanted him to get the ball more, all the fans.
Yeah.
They back then.
Yep.
Then he scores three touchdowns for the Patriots in the opener in 2017.
Incredible.
And then he's just gone. But you're right. Greg Roman, it's interesting. I've talked to a coach who he coached with, and this particular coach just went out of his way to say how much of a genius Greg Roman is when it comes to the run game, and that he just does things that other coaches aren't even thinking of.
Yeah.
Richie Incognito, another one, you know, when he was in Buffalo, he was blown away. I mean, here's a guy who's coached with or played for just about every kind of coach. Could not say enough about Greg Roman's mind. So it's just wild. Isn't it crazy? Like here are receivers that are saying the guy's dumb as a play designer. Yeah. You hear again and again that he's brilliant when it comes to the run game. The Ravens obviously are going to have to lean into that run game pretty hard this year.
Fascinating. I agree. I mean, that's how I look at when receivers, and it's funny that Greg Roman's known for the run game. It's the receivers that have issues with them.
Yeah.
You know, so it's something to pay attention to, but that team talent was, that's a really good, the AFC. I mean, we've talked about the AFC is just, that's insane.
Baltimore's front office and setup and culture and all that stuff that goes into building a team over trying to like just snap a finger with the Deshaun Watson, right? Like, I mean, we'll see what happens in Cleveland, but
yeah. Well, and you know, it's funny how you talked about the Jets draft and you really like what the Jets did. Joe Douglas, you know, that's where he, you know, learned to scout was Baltimore. That's his whole history. And he brought his right-hand man up in with the Jets. His name's Chad Alexander, who I've known Chad, who was on the pro side. He brought him with him from Baltimore. So, you know, Joe might be starting to get that same consistency of, you know, drafting guys and building free agency and all, if that quarterback hits. But I'm thinking about that now, that this AFC East, the cultures might be, you know, with Miami's new coach, the Jets doing some things, Patriots, obviously, you know, it's something to pay attention to. I mean, that division, I don't think you're going to have those easy games.
I feel like Ozzie Newsome, in talking to him for the book, he really stressed as a GM how he trusts his scouts, right, and the work that they put in.
Man, I'm telling you.
All year round, and that really is how their board was built. Obviously, he kind of passed the reins down to Eric DaCosta, but Joe Douglas is probably going to be the same way in New York, where he came up as a scout, traveling, living on the road, talking to these guys, watching these guys nonstop. A lot of teams aren't run by those kind of GMs. It's cap guys taking, and not to say one's good or bad. I mean, we've seen like a Mickey Loomis have success, right? Sean Payton probably had a lot to say about that team.
But Mickey didn't try to be anybody he wasn't.
Interesting.
Like, he didn't try to take over and say, no, I want this guy. Mickey was, he listened, trusted scouts. Sean Payton trusted scouts. We've talked about it. It's fun when you like Baltimore. It's fun working for, when you know you're just, it's like a machine. Like you just, everybody is like, you know, as a scout, all the work you do and all this effort you're putting in, it's going to work out because the guys at the top are, you know, they got this thing.
That's how it's really described around the league, a machine in Baltimore. It's just this well-oiled, self-sustaining scouting machine.
Yeah, they keep their guys. I mean, they keep their DaCosta. You know, they had him in place. Joe Ortiz is another right-hand man in Baltimore. Known him forever. I always respected him.
So, well, Lamar's got them by the you-know-what, though, doesn't he? He can ask for any amount of money he wants.
It's going to be that's history right there.
I mean, if you're Baltimore, what are your other options? He's not going to, you know what he is. You can win with him. He's an MVP. You have to pay him. I think he's in that category.
Oh yeah. There's no question.
Yeah.
How could you justify, how are you going to ever beat Mahomes and Josh Allen? I'd take my, you know, take your chances with him and you have a good defense.
Yep.
So,
and you know you're going to keep drafting well with that machine that you have. All right, that's enough of the rainbows and sunshine and flowers. And
we got the
mice.
Dolphins bold prediction.
We got to get to the mice out of the shed now, right? We got to get to the bad.
That's always fun.
All right.
So I'm like, part one. I think my takes on the bad are going to be a little more like your, a little more bold predictions.
I like it. I like it. All right. So without further ado, we'll finish up this episode of part one and get on to part two. Thank you, everyone.